In the land of fox and muskrat, the sockeye and the king, there's a pioneer tradition.
Welcome to another episode of By the Bay. It is Friday, February 28th.
And we have a special Beaver Roundup edition of the show today. Before we get started, let's read out the clues for today's mystery beaver search. There are two crystals hidden in two different locations. Here's the clue for the first crystal. You might reach new heights on switching if there is no itch.
Huh. Okay, and here is the clue for the second crystal. Where little ones went to play house or perhaps play a game of cat and mouse. Good luck to all of the crystal beaver trappers out there. And we're going to dive into the history of Beaver Roundup today.
And while beavers are cool, we have some tasty news up for a digestion. We take a look at the Naknek port, which in 2018 was the second most valuable port in the nation.
Wow. We have an update on the career and technical education program. We are also going to hear from the Beaver Roundup Parade.
Don't fall behind, eager beavers. We'll be right back.
In the land of fox and muskrat, the sockeye and the king, there's a pioneer tradition remembered every spring. It's taking a vacation when the trapper's work is done and rounding up the efforts of a long, hard winter's run. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back.
Just like that song stated, it's an amazing song, as Tyler was mentioning just now.
Indeed.
We are going to take a look at Beaver Roundup history and how it has evolved over the years. It's underway this week and into the weekend. The festival began in 1958 as a celebration of trappers returning with their furs to Dillingham.
For a little history and perspective on how the festival has changed over the years, we caught up with Russell Nelson and Joanne Nelson, Russell's mother. Russell is the director of facilities for the Dillingham City School District. Joanne has lived in Dillingham since 1952. She's retired. She used to work in the Marine Advisory Program with the University of Alaska.
And here's my conversation with them.
This is a very basic question, but why was it called Beaver Roundup?
Because the beaver pelts all were walking up and down the streets on people's backs. So that was why it was called Beaver Roundup.
Why not Fox Roundup?
Because back in the day when it was started, beavers reigned supreme. That's what everybody bought. The beaver market was really, pelt market was really good, and people got paid good prices for it. So they literally made a winter living out of it.
Wow. My earliest memories of Beaver Roundup, the races, the dog team races, which were the main part of the festivities, started on Main Street, downtown Dillingham. You would often see trappers in town with their load of pelts on their back, going from fur buyer to fur buyer. The fur buyers would examine the pelts and then make an offer of a price, and that's how the trappers sold their winter's catch.
I remember the trappers coming to town and carrying stacks of beaver pelts on their back, and under their arm would be, or holding up in one hand would be a bunch of fox pelts or whatever the other kind of animals that they'd caught, the otters, the marten. I also went trapping back in 77 and learned how to trap, and I sold a bunch of my furs. Bob Kallstrom bought my furs down at L&M Supplies, but there were other people that bought furs, David Green, Master Fur Year, and then later on his son Perry sold furs. So there were several fur buyers in town, and people would go from fur buyer to fur buyer, and they'd sit there and grade all the furs and give and write down on a piece of paper a number, and the guy would look at it and say, well, I'll be back if I, you know, and he would come back or not, depending on who offered him the most money for their furs.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific stories or memories that you have from Beaver Roundup's past?
Well, one year I did go beaver trapping with my husband and his dad, and I had a one-month-old baby and a three-year-old child, and we used dog teams to trap to check the trap lines and stuff. And when the trapping season was over and all the pelts that we had gotten and washed and brushed and stretched and dried, they were divvied out amongst the people who put in the effort. And I guess I didn't work very hard because I got all the little tiny ones. They're called Aksatu or Aksatuyaks, the smaller pelts. I was a bit embarrassed to walk from store to store with this bunch of little small puppy things on my back.
I don't think the guys wanted to carry the little ones in. But I remember Charlotte Barth, too. She kind of ran Beaver Roundup for a number of years, and she was really good at it. She started a bunch of raffles, and one of my earliest memories before this side of the high school was even built, when the middle school gym was the only gym here, and we had a little stage in there. They had a talent show going, and Johnny Bonnet got up on stage, and they handed him a pair of these plastic black glasses with a big giant nose attached to it. And what it said on the agenda for that time, it was Johnny Bonnet laughs. And he got up and started laughing, and it was hilarious. And he was laughing up on the stage, and all of a sudden everybody was laughing. The whole place was just roaring and laughing, and that's all Uncle Johnny was doing was laughing. He had the whole place just hollering.
How has the festival changed over the years? Obviously, it was really a venue for people to sell furs, and it doesn't seem like that happens as much, or like that takes place as much in this concentrated period of time anymore. What's changed about it?
I think that this year there, I don't see as much on the agenda, and I think the big loss is the dog team races themselves.
The difference that I see right now is nobody's running up and down the streets carrying pelts, and there's no dog races. When I was young, the dog teams came from all over the place, from upriver over in Togiak, the Iliamna side, yeah, people from Bethel. There was a lot of participation around here.
Why do you think people don't sled race anymore?
Well, you know, back when we were younger, when Beaver Roundup started, there weren't snow machines. Everybody got around by dog sleds. And now with snow machines going, and it's the high cost of feeding the animals, you have to take care of them all year round. You don't have them to use for other reasons like transportation like they used to. So I think it just slowly moved away from it.
Because people don't really sell pelts anymore during Beaver Roundup, do you get the sense that there's a very active trapping community in Dillingham or in the region?
Well, there is an active trapping community in the region. I know several people that go out. You can talk to Todd Fritzy or Jimmy Folsom, or there's an Andy Aderman. There's a number of people around here that really, really go out and do trapping. They mainly sell their own furs, however they, or have things made out of them. It's not like the main income for people like it used to be, where beaver prices were real high. Back when I was trapping fox, you'd get $120 a pelt. And trapping fox was easy, so I remember buying a snow machine off a trapping fox one winter, and you can't do that anymore. They just don't want to pay you enough money, hardly for the gas and with the cost of the traps and everything.
Well, I think they're doing a good job this year of Beaver Roundup, and I do appreciate so much the blanket toss. That's an old traditional thing. A lot of the things that they have now are just newly invented, or, you know, not, they don't bring back the memories. But so glad to have it.
I really enjoy Beaver Roundup. It's a time when you get a lot of people usually show up, and I'm glad there's festivities for them to go. I wish the snow machine races would be back. I remember back in the 70s and 80s, we used to have really good snow machine races, and then my favorite was the one to Manicotic and back. It was just a blast. A lot of people joined. We had a really good people that ran the races, people like Pat O'Connor. Mm-hmm. It's no longer here, but hopefully somebody will put that back together. And since we don't have dogs anymore, but we do have snow machines, and that used to be a big part of Beaver Roundup. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And airplanes have always been a part of Beaver Roundup for years, too.
Really?
Nick Wall used to do a lot of flying for doing different things down here on the pond.
100%. He was up there with a handheld radio, and he talked to the ground crew, and he watched everybody on the race. If there was an accident, he knew it. He could give reports. And we would hear it over KDLG, the report saying who was where on the trail, and people would dash to Wood River Road and watch them go across there, and then they'd dash out to the Waskee Road and watch them go by out there, and it was just fun.
So Eddie Clark has continued the flying for Beaver Roundup over here, you know, coming over from Naknek every year, which has been really nice. So at least we get a little bit of air work going on.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in to talk about this. Mm-hmm. It's been really fun.
Okay. Thank you, Izzy.
I also talked with Oscar Flensburg. He's lived in Dillingham all his life, and he said that over the years, Beaver Roundup has taken place earlier and earlier. I talked to Oscar at his house, and his dog, Bristle, was nosing around the microphone if you hear any dog noises.
The Beaver Roundup was my birthday, and that was in April. We used to have a lot more snow then. It was colder. They used to have boxing matches. I was in one of those Beaver Roundups boxing a kid from Stewyhawk. Well, he was my same class in the fourth grade. I got licked, but one guy owned a pool hall, another guy helped him. Then there was a guy, our neighbor, Fred Bergloff, and another guy, Merle Fielding. They used to teach kids boxing over the course of the year. Then they'd bring them to the Lowe's Theater and put a boxing ring up on a stage. And they'd have boxing matches in there for the Beaver Roundup. They had pie-eating contests, too, out on in a sheltered area in downtown. And there was an old military 6x6 truck that had seats in it. They just put a table in the middle of it and line it up with kids that wanted to be in that pie eating contest. Gave them all a slice of pie and let them go at it. And big crowd of people out there watching. It was, you know, up a little ways so everybody could see. There was a dog races downtown were a big thing. And they were different than they are now. They'd run them through town, up the street instead of down. They'd run right through town, the schoolyard, and then down around toward Icicle and up along the little bluff and then out into the flat, all the way around and come back in from Kanakanak direction. They had bigger sleds, bigger dogs.
Like Russell and Joanne mentioned, Oscar said that trapping has become less economically viable over the years.
When I got my whole limit, a beaver and a few fox and some otter, and they offered me $200, you know, for a month's work. And I still have those in a bag at my house back in the woods because that's a reminder, you know, it wasn't worth it. I mean, you'd be out all day long checking traps and skinning late into the night and then stretching them for $200 a month, you know, that's not very much.
Now, you might have heard Russell mention David Green. He's a fur buyer from Anchorage, and Oscar talked about David, too.
He'd be in the hardware section of the store. Mm-hmm. Big table and a big stack of furs all around him, and people would come in and watch him. He'd have a yardstick 3 foot long, and he'd slap it down those skins there and make a big snap, you know, just like a carnival show. And he'd flip the fur over and feel it, then slap the next one down. Then he'd put them all in different piles, and when he was all done, he'd make an offer to the guy for buying them. And if the guy didn't like them, the guy said, okay, you'll be back. He'd have all his money in the back of his, he had one, they called him Alaska Tuxedo with a pouch in the back. All his money was back in there, cash. And he'd just pull it out, flip him cash right there on the spot.
Wow, what a time to be alive. Should we play the Beaver Roundup song?
No, we cannot sing until we're done with the rest of the news. Otherwise, our singing would be the rest of the show.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin anyone's day, although it's only noon. A few shrewd hunters found the crystal beavers hidden around town. On Wednesday, Craig Maines and his family found the first beaver at 3:30 p.m. at the Starflight Hangar by the Cracker Box at the Dillingham Airport. Thursday, mystery beaver number 2 was found in a hallway light fixture outside Chug Ewing's office by Christine Tinker and Nicole Krause.
And this Friday, there is a crystal beaver and a crystal swan hidden, and we already gave those clues. We can't repeat them. We're, you know, sworn to secrecy.
It is. We have a job to do. Now, we're going to talk about CTE, and that's not head injuries, but the Bristol Bay Career and Technical Education Program. BBCTE achieved official regional status last year by bringing the Dillingham City School District into the fold. The program is now available to all high school students in Bristol Bay. Program Director Zach Stenson says the new status opens up more opportunities to the program.
Suddenly, we're able to offer a lot more courses, more seats than we have in the past. And also for different organizations that have really similar goals as we do to help build kind of workforce development, to help build skills, to build career awareness within the region. Organizations like BBEDC, like BBNC, they're able to help fund us.
The Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association covers travel, housing, and coursework expenses. The program is divided into 4 weeks spread throughout the academic year. The days are structured like a workplace environment, teaching everything from welding to emergency trauma training. Most courses focus on obtaining certifications, college credit hours, or a mix of both. Program coordinator Jenny Schrack says it's an opportunity for students to figure out their long-term goals.
That's what this BBRCT is about. It's trying to help these students be successful in their careers. They don't necessarily need to go to college or to a trade school. They just need something when they graduate. They're going somewhere. They're passionate about something. They're not just lost when they graduate.
To apply, students submit an essay and a reference from a faculty member. If they are accepted, BBCTE will work with them to pinpoint their interests and place them in courses that fit their needs. The next series of classes start next month.
I'm glad to hear that this will be available to the entire region now. And you mentioned that classes are structured like a workplace environment. What does that mean exactly?
So each day runs from 8 until 5 p.m., 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., and the students are responsible for showing up. The program is also adding timesheets that record each student's day-to-day tasks. Essentially, they get what they put in. Hmm. BBCTE wants to instill a level of commitment.
Hmm. Got it. And those next series of classes take place next month?
Correct. At the end of March. I believe the dates are March 22nd through the 27th.
Awesome. The Alaska Board of Fisheries has disbanded the special committee created to address management of king salmon in the Nooshiak Fishing District. The board took the action at its Upper Cook Inlet Finfish meeting earlier this month. The King Salmon Committee was created as a result of proposals at the 2018 Board of Fish meeting in Dillingham, and the committee was tasked with creating a mechanism to pair restrictions on both the commercial and sport fisheries to conserve king salmon. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game said the reason for the board's decision was that it found the committee's initial goals seemed, quote, difficult to achieve, unquote. Here is board member Reed Morisky speaking about the committee's first meeting held last October.
We went through several options with users at this meeting, and it was my opinion that they were quite a ways apart, and yet it was a good discussion, but I personally didn't see much, if any, consensus being even close to being formed. And
king runs haven't been strong in recent years. In 2017 and in 2019, there were restrictions in the sport fishery because of poor king escapement. Tim Sands is the area management biologist for the Nooshiak District. He says that the committee was formed to reassess the king management plan in the face of lower king runs.
It's all about sharing the resource and coming up, you know, changing the plan. The plan has been in place since the early 90s, I think. And the user groups and stuff have changed in that time frame. The runs are somewhat less, I think, now.
At that Board of Fish meeting in late 2018, the King Management Plan was changed, removing automatic triggers to restrict sport fishing, which were based on sonar counts. Now, Sand says those intermediary steps are gone, and the sport fishery can only be restricted to catch and release or closed. Sand says that looking ahead, they have to continue to discuss how to balance commercial and sport fisheries.
How can we make things work for everybody and protect the resource and everything else? You know, it's a complicated thing, and it's going to take some discussions.
If the king salmon escapement is projected at below the lower end goal of 55,000, the sockeye fishery has to stay closed until 100,000 sockeye are projected up the Wood River. This year, Sand says they will likely be even more conservative in their management and will probably wait until twice as many sockeye pass the Wood River Tower before they open up the fishing in the district.
1 year of bad escapement is not crippling to the stock, but we don't want to have multiple years of poor escapement.
Well, hopefully those resilient fish reach their escapement goals. Now, more fishy news. The port of Bristol Bay in Naknek is the second most valuable port in the U.S. That's according to an annual study by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. The port's value increased by more than $40 million in commercial fishery landings between 2017 and 2018. In last year's report, Naknek ranked third. Jeremy Kern was the assistant port foreman in 2018 and was promoted to port foreman in 2019. He's worked in the Naknek Harbor for nearly a decade and held other roles as a mechanic and equipment operator. He attributes some of the port's success to local hires.
The local people know the industry. They've grown up around the industry. They know a lot of the fishermen and a lot of the processing people that work at the different plants.
He says they also prioritized precise data collection in the port, despite their old-school techniques.
We are still pen and paper, and we have a program on within Microsoft that we use for our specific billing. But as far as yard stow and that kind of stuff, it's pen and paper.
This year, Kern hopes to invest in an internal operating system for the upcoming fish season.
To be able to help us more accurately track where the containers are, where they're at in the yard, what time they come in, what time they go out in the trucking. It'll also help us with our record keeping of where the container is and the billing for loading, offloading, storage.
Borough manager Greg Brailsford said Kern has continued the port's success in the 2019 season.
This is a very positive reflection on the new port foreman. In the year-over-year comparisons from this year to last year, he raised the port revenue 6.75% and lowered the cost by 15.7%.
Kern also combated the effects of low staffing last year by finding ways to boost efficiency. He says that changing the schedule to make shifts longer ensured that someone was always available at the port. The Port of Bristol Bay's landings put in eighth place. Dutch Harbor once again remained first in landings, but dropped from second to third in value. The harbor in New Bedford, Massachusetts, was listed as the most valuable port in the nation.
A few weeks ago, we talked to a few people involved with the Pebble Partnership's compensatory mitigation plan, and last month, Pebble released a proposal to offset its proposed mine project's potential impacts to wetlands. Compensatory mitigation is part of the Clean Water Act, and it usually means restoring or protecting wetlands that serve the same purpose as those being altered or destroyed by development. But there's a catch. Bristol Bay's wetlands are almost untouched, so they wouldn't need restoration. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I reported on how Pebble is proposing to offset its impacts by repairing sewer systems. If the Pebble mine is built, it would permanently eliminate about 3.5 miles of Bristol Bay's wetlands. The company has drafted three proposals to offset that impact. One of them includes out-of-kind mitigation efforts, where Pebble would pay for repairs to wastewater systems in three of the communities closest to the mine site, Cockanock, New Halen, and Nundalton. That's notable because those projects would not directly impact wetlands, even though they would improve water quality. Usually, project applicants work to restore or protect habitat that has the same function as the wetlands it would eliminate. In some places, there are a lot of wetlands that have been impacted by development. Those can be restored, but that's not the case in Bristol Bay, where the wetlands are mostly pristine. George Alexi is the president of the Nundalton Tribal Council, which opposes Pebble.
Our position is we do not want anything from Pebble, nothing.
Alexi says the council sees Pebble's mitigation plan as the company's attempt to garner goodwill in the community. All three village sewer systems are over capacity. The cities own the sewer systems, and they agreed to have Pebble investigate them in order to craft the mitigation plan. Pebble would need their agreement before starting construction. Alexi acknowledged that Nundalton's system is old and in need of repairs, but he says that the risk Pebble poses to the community is greater.
We have the most to lose on this whole Pebble stuff. We're close to it. It's right in our backyard. It'll hurt the hunt, everything, water, the fish, the hunting, the animals.
Both the tribal councils of Cockanock and New Halen are neutral on the project. New Halen's council declined to comment, and Cockanock did not respond in time for this story. As part of its mitigation plan, Pebble has also proposed to rehabilitate salmon habitat near Dillingham and King Salmon, removing barriers by repairing culverts. It has also proposed cleaning up marine debris along 7 miles of the coast at Amokdadori on Kamishak Bay. Out-of-kind mitigation in Alaska is not unprecedented, but it's still unusual, and some critics say Pebble's inclusion of sewer updates is proof that they're reaching outside the box, and that the project's impacts would be too big in a wetlands area that's too sensitive to be offset through more conventional efforts. Lake and Peninsula Borough Manager Nathan Hill worked with Pebble to identify the projects. The borough is officially neutral on the mine. They worked with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium to identify the projects Pebble would focus on.
We thought it was only fair that if we could find projects that benefited communities closer to the project, it made sense. So we encouraged it.
Hill said that they'd heard of the possibility that mitigation efforts were being planned in other areas. By working with Pebble, he said, they could ensure that if the mine is permitted, the communities closest to the site would benefit. Pebble spokesperson Mike Heatwell calls the out-of-kind mitigation approach a when-when because it addresses the fiscal and environmental impacts of the community's wastewater systems.
We're able to upgrade some water and sewer systems that may or may not receive the funds to do so in an environment where there are more issues to work on than there are available opportunities to tackle them.
Heatwell noted that if the mine is permitted, the mitigation projects would have to be completed before construction of the mine begins. He didn't have final cost estimates, but he said that each project would be in the magnitude of millions. Heatwell says Pebble would cover all the costs and that the company's ability to pay for those projects would factor into its final authorization of the construction and operation of the mine. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
As we wind down the show here, we've decided to turn back time. In 2017, Gisa Ray wrote for the talent portion of the Little Miss Beaver Roundup pageant. She was 10, and she ended up winning that year. In the spirit of the festivities, we're going to play Gisa's poem, recorded by our former news director, Avery Lill.
Well, my poem is called Beaver Roundup, and I wrote it for the Little Miss Beaver Roundup pageant talent portion. Parade, parade, the races, so many happy, excited faces. There's bingo fun and also pins, lots of raffles, losses, and wins. Finding, hiding, eating, feeding, selling, buying, candy plane flying, winning bets and losing too. Drawing names and asking who. As you know, it has a history, including the crystal beaver of mystery. There's contests like baking and cooking too, and as everyone knows, there's lots to do. While the turkey bowl pounds, there's plenty of sounds, while snow goes go zoom and fireworks go boom. At the end, we all get wistful, watching falling snowflakes glisten. Critters to skin and trees to hack, we party along the new shagak. With warm hot cocoa in my cup, this is my story of Beaver Roundup.
That was Gisa Ray reading her Beaver Roundup poem in 2017. She mentioned the Beaver Roundup parade, and I actually went to the parade this year. It was very cold, but there were a ton of people lining the streets waiting for the floats to drive by. I talked to a few kids who were waiting for the candy to fly out of those floats.
I'm Blossom and I'm 7.
And are you looking forward to the parade?
No.
No?
Yes.
So you wouldn't be at
the parade?
I'm looking forward to the parade, and my name is Dakota Drake.
How old are you?
5.
That's exciting. What do you like most about the parade?
Giving candy.
I love getting the candy.
Me too.
Yeah?
Is it? Are we actually
Hello.
Yeah.
I only like the parade.
Those were a few kids waiting for candy at the Beaver Roundup Parade. We'll be right back after this.
Of a long, hard winter.
All right, now with the weather in Bristol Bay. Currently in Dillingham, it is -2 degrees with some snow flurries. The forecast says it's going to be sunny today, but I don't see any sunshine out there yet. Highs are 5 to 15 degrees with a variable wind at 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, a slight chance of snow after midnight. Lows 0 to 5 degrees, a variable wind at 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Saturday, a chance of snow in the morning, then snow and rain in the afternoon. Areas of blowing snow, snow accumulation up to 8 inches. Highs in the mid-20s to mid-30s, east wind 10 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 40. Over in Naknek, currently it's 36 degrees with fair skies. Today, sunny, a high of 12 degrees, winds northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy early, followed by cloudy skies overnight. A low of -1 degrees, winds northeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tomorrow, a 100% chance of snow showers, a high of 36 degrees, winds east at 15 to 25 miles per hour, snow accumulating 3 to 5 inches. Up in Unalakleet currently, it's -5 degrees with sunny skies. Today, more sunshine, maybe some clouds, a high around 5 degrees, winds northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low near -10 degrees, winds east at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And tomorrow, partly cloudy, gusty winds in the afternoon, a high of 7 degrees, winds northeast at 20 to 30 miles per hour. And now, Izzy Ross has the Beaver Roundup scheduled for the rest of the weekend.
Yes, I do. So obviously, unless someone has found the crystal beavers, that is still going on. We have tug of war starting at 2:30 p.m. in the high school parking lot. Those are teams of 10. From 3 to 7 p.m., there's a laser shoot and laser hunting at the Fish and Game Blue Warehouse behind L&M and the Dillingham Hotel. All ages are welcome. It's a blast. You can contact Phil at 842-1599. There is also a lot of basketball tonight from 3 to 4:30 p.m. and there's Dillingham Elementary basketball in the high school gym. There are halftime shows with the Dillingham High School basketball team shooting contests. From 3:30 to 4:30 p.m., there's Kids Healthy Living Bingo in the elementary gym. And at 3:30 p.m., there's the Eskimo Blanket Toss in the high school parking lot. And let's take a look at what is happening today. Okay. We have...
There's a big pamphlet. Lots of words.
It's a big pamphlet. The writing is like font, like two. Okay, let's see. We have... From 4:30 to 5:30 p.m., there's, okay, you know what, there's a lot of repetition here, too, so mm-hmm. That makes me feel, okay, 5:30, okay, here we go, 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., middle school girls basketball in the high school gym that's hosted by the Dillingham High School Lady Wolverines and the Wolverines basketball teams. Halftime show, Hungry Hippo. I don't know what that means, but...
I'm thinking of the game.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
You're thinking of the board game, Hungry Hippo? Okay, 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., the men's league basketball game. That's game one in the high school gym. And there's a halftime show, again, with the Dillingham High School basketball team shooting contest. At 7 p.m., Singspiration in the Bristol Bay Church. And there's also a movie, Maleficent 2, in the middle school gym. 8 to 9:30 p.m., men's league basketball game two. And those are just a few of the events, honestly, this afternoon. And we have a jam-packed weekend, and we will be posting the schedule up on the KDLG website along with the show this evening if anyone wants to check it out. I think these schedules are also available at AC.
Yeah, I've seen them around town. Yeah. Now we're going to switch over to community announcements. All jurors are asked to call tonight after 5 p.m. for an update in Dillingham. Next Tuesday, the Chogyong Tribal Council will have a community meeting regarding health care. It will be open to the public to attend. That's at 6:30 p.m. in the Dillingham Middle School gym. The Bristol Bay Borough will have their assembly meeting next Monday, a special meeting next Monday, March 2nd at 5 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The Senior Center is seeking donations to be used as prizes for their bingo games. Prizes have included picture frames, laundry soap, dish soap, jewelry, and playing cards. No donation is too small. Anything you can give will be appreciated. The Bristol Bay Sustainability Summit, Creating a Thriving Future, is happening April 7th through April 8th in the Dillingham Middle School Gym. It's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs, innovators, fishermen, small business owners, Bristol Bay Tribal, municipal, and corporate leadership and staff. The deadline to apply is next Monday, March 2nd. General registration deadline is April 1st. If there are any questions, you can contact UTBB at 842-1687. And I think that's it for the announcements.
Great. Are we done?
I believe so. That's okay. A wrap for our Beaver Roundup special. Thank you, everybody, for listening today.
Are we going to play the song now?
Yeah.
In full, I guess we've kind of teased it this whole show.
Yeah, we'll play the song we mentioned singing. That's not happening, but we will definitely let the other people sing for you.
Absolutely. And we actually have two Beaver Roundup songs. I don't know what this other version is. It's a little bit shorter, but we're just going to play them in quick succession and see which one you guys like better.
Go for broke.
Yep. Happy Beaver Roundup, everyone. Have a fun and safe weekend out there.
In the land of fox and muskrat, the sockeye and the king, there's a pioneer tradition remembered every spring. It's taking a vacation when the trapper's work is done and rounding up the efforts of a long, hard winter's run. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup, where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. From Muskeg to the rivers, from mountains to the flats, the brave and sturdy mountain man has come to lay his traps. He's gathered nature's bounty from that dawn to setting sun, and now it's time to gather round for fellowship and fun. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup, where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. The airplanes and the snow ghosts have changed, sang so they say, and though we travel different than they did in Grandpa's day, as long as there are beaver to be found along the way, there'll always be a roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup, where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. So come on, friends and neighbors, please listen to this song. This is an invitation, we'd like you to come along. We've had 40 years of Roundup, and we'd like at least 40 more of good time celebration on the New Chagak shores. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup, where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. Beaver Roundup, by the shores of the New Chagak, Beaver Roundup, when the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup, where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, A.K. Thank you very much.